If you have a financial question for Pegg or Bruce, you can always call this number 24-7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But in the meantime, we urge you to call or text our studio line during the show, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Pegg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg, and always good to be with the legendary Denny Long. Denny, thanks for sitting in today. We always appreciate our time with you. And Denny and listeners, we're going to talk today about something, Peg, that we actually talk about pretty frequently, but I don't think we can talk about this too much. The title of the show is Five Questions to Ask Before Retirement. As everybody listening probably knows, retirement is a major life transition, and you don't just want to do it willy-nilly. You want to think about it and plan for it carefully. And we're going to give five questions that you should ask yourself before pulling the trigger on retirement. And Peg, I guess the elephant in the room and the most frequently asked question that we hear as advisors, not just on this topic, but just on everything financial, is do I have enough money to retire, or is my money going to last as long as I live? Some variation of the question of how much is enough. Peg?
Yeah, I think this being number one, do I have enough money to retire, is probably supposed to be in the number one position, because we do get that question a lot. But we can't just answer that, oh, yeah, you'll be just fine, or, well, let's talk about it. So, you know, whether you're nearing retirement or you're just beginning to plan, because I don't want this show just to be about people that may be thinking about it, you know, tomorrow, but also people that are planning ahead. But I think you get more stress as you get to that date. And it is a big deal. Do I have enough money to retire? Well, how do you figure that out? A lot of times, I mentioned on this show that I'm a visionary. So what I do is I ask clients, and I've asked clients for decades now, what do you see yourself doing, you know, after retirement? Because a lot of that has to do with, what are you going to do? You know, and then when I get this vision, do I believe that they have enough savings to support this desired lifestyle? Because there are a lot of people out there, Bruce, that they envision what they're going to do. They're not just going to, you know, go in a lazy boy chair and watch TV all day. They've been waiting for this day. And so a lot of times it is expensive, especially in the beginning, of, you know, saying, okay, I'm okay with my paycheck stopping. You know, when we talk to clients about that and we talk about it out loud, they say, ooh, you're right. That is dramatic, right? Every 2 weeks, I don't get a deposit in my checking account. You know, how do I replace that? So financial advisors like us, I believe, have a lot of value when it comes to, do I have enough money? And the reason I say that is, and we'll go on to the other four tough questions that people have to ask themselves, is how do you know if you have enough? And, you know, most people, Bruce, know, hey, I'm going to have this Social Security check come in. I might have a pension that I can turn on. I don't really know when to do those things and how it fits into my personal plan. But then you also have personal savings. When do you actually use those to cover your needs? And then also healthcare. I mean, what a biggie after you turn, you know, 65 or maybe you're 55 and you want to retire. Healthcare is absolutely one of the biggest concerns of people retiring. What's the cost going to be now? What's it going to be 10 years from now? What's it going to be 30 years from now? Because a lot of times people are retired longer than they've been working. So those are some of the things, Bruce, that I think, you know, when you're looking at enough money to retire, those are large items that you need to be confident before you go in and say, hey, I'm out of here, Bruce.
Yeah, that's all good stuff, Peg. I'll just add a little bit. you know, to know if you have enough money, you kind of need to know how much you're going to spend. And that's part of the tricky part, is that people don't know what they're going to spend when they retire, and how their cost of living will change as compared to when they were working. Now, some people do. I I'm sure you do too, that kind of have a plan, that have thought it through, have a budget, and they have a pretty good idea of what their expenses are going to be. But I have a lot of people that just have no clue. And I think oftentimes, Peg and listeners and Danny, people are surprised to learn that, in my experience, most people, the first few years after retirement, they actually spend a lot more than their last few years of work. Because I think a lot of people, before they've retired, just assume that your spending will go down, right? A lot of costs associated with working go away. You're no longer contributing to a retirement plan. Maybe you don't have to spend money for dress clothes or travel expenses or lunches and whatnot. So you think that your costs or your spending will go down. But like you said, Peg, a lot of people have a vision of a lifestyle, of things they want to do, but dare I say bucket list, and I'm doing air quotes around bucket list, and they go do those things. They wanted to wait till they were retired, and they have the time to pursue these passions. They have the economic wherewithal, and so these things cost money, these trips that they want to take, these things that they want to do to check off their list of bucket list things. So people often spend, in fact, I would say the vast majority of my experience, people spend more those first few years after they retire. And that's fine, as long as you plan for that and you know that likelihood exists, we can plan for it. So how much are you going to need is a function of what is your life going to look like? Many people, you said, Peg, sitting on the lazy boy. I have clients that are content doing that. I have clients that are content sitting on the front porch and looking at their garden and not spending much money, not doing much. They're happy that way. I have other people that have aspirations to do other things that cost money. Some people want to help loved ones, give to charity, help kids, help grandkids. So it's really a function of your core values, your priorities. How much is it going to take to live the way you want to live? And then we can calculate, or help them calculate, if they have enough or not. So question number one, and it's the biggest question in our industry, do I have enough money to retire and not run out of money before I die? So that's the first question. Peg, what's number two?
Yeah, and before I go to number two, number four we had is, what does retirement life look like for me? And so a lot of what you talked about kind of said that, but you don't, what the term we usually use is, you've got the go-go years, you've got the slow-go years, and then you've got the no-go years. And so as financial planners, we actually end up saying that you're going to spend a lot in those go-go years. I mean, it's just so fun, Bruce, to help people transition to retirement and see their excitement, but yet their fear. Some people hide that fear from us, but we get them to be confident to say it is time to travel, and maybe you want to do some part-time work and you want to hang out with your family more and all those things. So I just wanted to add that in, because that's that kind of coincides with number four. But number two is, where will I live? Today, people can live anywhere, right? And a lot of the remote, ways of living and maybe contributing to something that you want. Do you want to stay in your home? Do you want to downsize? What I found with my clients over the last 15 years is that downsizing was more expensive than staying in the home that they're currently in. And that's because the baby boomer population is so large. So the builders are able to recognize that baby boomers want to downsize, but yet they get half the space and it costs more to live there. The other thing is, maybe you want to rent. I've had clients that actually sold their home and said, you know, for the convenience of my children, I would rather have my home sold and have very few belongings that my children have to deal with. So they just go rent a place. And then, you know, discuss your plans with your family. Don't be hesitant. If you do want to do some big things, maybe take a trip around the world or or do what I mentioned, you know, sell your family home, which that might be sentimental for some of your children or grandchildren, you know, just talk about it out loud. Once again, a lot of times today, Bruce, we're going to talk about taxes, but even if you sell your home and, you know, you need to know the rules, you need to know the tax implications on where you're going to go. Are you going to leave the state that you're in? There's lots to think about healthcare-wise, maybe your friends, your social network, that kind of thing. These are conversations that we actually do have at our table when we meet with clients on their reviews. I love to hear their stories and what their aspirations are and their vision of how they see themselves 10 or 15 years from now. Bruce?
Yeah, and I apologize, Peg. I didn't mean to go out of the order of our questions. I knew number four was coming up, but honestly, there's some overlap on this stuff, right? If I'm going to ask myself, yes, how much money do I need? Well, you know, these other questions that we're going to talk about are going to factor into how much money it takes to live the way we want. So we will repeat all these again before we're done, the specific questions. So again, number one, how much do I need to retire? Number two, as you spoke about, Peg, where am I going to live? And you mentioned many of the variables, but one that you didn't mention that I think is going to resonate with you, I see my clients impacted in terms of where they live by where are the grandkids, right?
Yeah, there's no question. But you know what I'm finding is that they're so busy, right? They're so busy, and especially if these grandchildren are in school, you have a limited time. But it is a very difficult decision for our clients and actually, quite frankly, my friends. You know, do I want to be next door? Do I want to have access? Maybe it's a 2-hour flight versus a 4-hour flight. More and more, I would say, people are not living on the same street, you know, as their children live. And those children are all over. One may be in California, one may be in New York City. That's just the way that everybody lives today. Bruce?
What's the third question, Peg?
Well, this is a biggie. How do I access the money then for my income? You know, the biggest part of your retirement planning is strategically, you know, having some type of an idea where that income is going to come from. I would say that's probably 99% of the reason that people come to us is because of the thought of, well, do I take Social Security? When do I take my pension? How do I take my money out of? I've been a really good saver, but how and where do I take my money out from? And this is, we talk about this a lot because we haven't talked about the Your Money Matrix for a while, but the minute somebody comes to us or a client in their review, we're looking at all those buckets of money and saying, well, how are they taxed? Well, the cash in the bank, hey, you've already paid tax on that. That's something you could pull out and not have a tax consequence. But more and more people, and I would say probably from the past up until now, have deferred a lot of their savings through their employer plan, 401k, 403b, all of that money that you pull out, you owe Uncle Sam some money. So you have to consider, well, what percentage of my overall net worth is in something that's taxable? And then if you've been with Wealth Enhancement Group or you have a reliable financial advisor, they probably coached you to also have some tax-free or tax, preferential treatment like Roth IRAs or municipal bonds or something that you could pull out without having a tax consequence. And so planning on those different types of buckets, taxable, tax deferred, and tax advantaged, you can create an income for yourself that may, and I'd say does in the long term, is if you're strategic about it, your money will actually last longer. And this is probably the hardest part for people to do, is to create their own withdrawal strategy. And then you've got your required minimum distributions that kick in at some point. And some clients also have annuities that they've deferred for a long time. Like, how do you get that money out? We don't necessarily want to leave that for the children to have to pay the taxes on it. So this number three is a big one. Where does the money come from for the rest of my life to match the lifestyle that I see in my vision, my vision? Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, this is such an important topic. And again, there's always going to be a little overlap, right? Because our fifth question is about tax considerations, but you have to consider tax considerations when you determine your income. So I talk about this a lot. When we retire, we want to make sure we spend the smartest money first. And how do you know what the smartest money is? And there's variables to consider: taxation, investment returns, and so on. But at the risk of seeming self-serving, but I think this is accurate, I think this is really a differentiator between us and a lot of other folks in our space. Everybody in our space can help their clients grow their money, can help them invest and get a competitive return on investment. But a lot of those firms aren't going to help their clients spend their money. We actually help our clients spend their money and make sure they spend it wisely and efficiently to make it last as long as possible. And we're proud of that we provide that service. And it's kind of standard operating procedure for us. So number three is, how do you access, as you said, Peg, money for my income for how do I access my money for my retirement income? Number four, we talked about a little bit, but we could probably go just a little deeper. What does it look like? What's important to you? What does your retirement look like? What do you want to accomplish? What are your core values? Have a vision. What does retirement look like for you, Peg?
You know, it's interesting. Not a lot of people have a very detailed plan. Now, they might have, if you're an engineer or an accountant or a CPA or something like that, yes, they come to us as well, and they've got lots of numbers on paper, but they don't have this vision. And then we kind of have two people a lot of times, right? The couple comes in, and they're not in alignment at all. And so one may have this, you know, this what's retirement look like for me, but the other one all of a sudden has heard this for the first time when we're sitting at the table talking about it. So part of our job, too, is trying to blend those visions and make sure that both of them, before you might retire, is to get on the same page. Or how do you actually consider where you're going to travel, where your home's going to be? Do you still want to work? Do you have some hobbies? We talked about, you know, do you want to live by your grandchildren? Well, the other one doesn't want to. Or maybe you have two places. I find that as the fun part of the job, is walking through with people, trying to create their visions, help them see. It's probably there, but they just don't even know it. So we ask a lot of questions. You know, will you miss your family? Will you miss your friends if you leave? Are you going to stay physically active? And people might be listening right now, Bruce, and say, seriously, you're asking all those questions? I thought you just did investments or managing money. We're so well beyond, and I find that as the fun part, living through people's lives versus wondering what the stock market did yesterday. Bruce?
Yep, and then the fifth question, and we kind of touched on it, but again, we can go a little bit deeper in the time we have left in the first half of the show. What tax strategies do I need to know about in retirement? And Peg, this surprises people, I think, but I tell clients all the time, there's a lot more tax planning strategies that are applicable to us once you're retired than there are while you're still working. And I think that surprises people, but this is where we can really get into some strategies that might save people taxes over the course of their lifetime. Peg?
Well, and you have to prepare. When we were talking about the go-go years and the slow-go years and the no-go years, the go-go years, we have to plan for bigger distributions right when you retire, because the list in many cases is long. And there's just so many activities that people want to do. But if you prepared ahead of time, you would have some short-term money to be able to access that and not have the stress about having an income anymore coming in, and that you had earmarked this money for that. But you have to become somewhat knowledgeable and rely on your financial advisor as to capital gains. And I just mentioned that many, many people have tax-deferred assets that they've never paid a dime on. I've actually had a client or two that wanted me to put an IOU in their financial statement that they owe 33% of their IRA to the government. Let's not count on that as part of our bucket, if you will, for the long term. I need to know what my IOU to the IRS is going to be. So you need to optimize your entire plan, looking at all the different angles to make sure that you are knowledgeable about where to take the money from. Bruce?
Yeah. Well, let's do this, Danny. I know we're about out of time for the first half. When we come back in the second half, Peg and I will share our last thoughts about the five questions to ask yourself before retirement. But then listeners can drive the rest of the show, topics or questions either on this topic or any other financial topic that they might have on their mind. We'll get to as many as we can in the second half. Danny?
Very good, Bruce. We'll do that very thing. We urge you to call or text our studio line. We're getting calls and texts as we speak now. Here's the number for either a phone call or text, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. Back after the break with more of your money. If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, call this number 24/7 if you like, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, we urge you to call or text our studio line, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Danny Long. Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there with us. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about five questions to ask before you retire. In the first half of the show, the questions we covered, number one, do you have enough money to retire? Is your money going to last as long as you do? That's probably the single biggest question that Peg and I and other advisors get in the work that we do with our clients. Number two, where will I live in retirement? Am I going to downsize? Am I going to move to a warmer climate? Am I going to be seasonal? Where am I going to live? Number three, how do I start to access my money to create my retirement income? And this is a big one that a lot of people, I think, really need help on and have a hard time doing this on their own. They've accumulated certain assets, maybe in a company retirement plan, maybe some investments outside the plan. Most people are going to get a Social Security benefit. Some might get a pension. How do you put all that together to create an efficient income that lasts as long as you do? Most people, that's complicated stuff, and it's hard to do alone. The fourth question we ask, what does retirement look like for me? What's your vision of retirement? Does it include travel? Does it include volunteering? One of the things, Peg, that we didn't talk about that I want to mention quickly, I think it's important that when you retire, that you still have purpose. You have a reason to get up in the morning. You have something to drive and motivate you. I've noticed over the 40 plus years that I've been doing this, that my clients that retire successfully have that kind of energy and vision and structure to their lives. The clients that say, boy, I've just been waiting to retire and sleep in, and you know, have a couple cups of coffee in the morning and read the paper till noon. Those people seem to struggle with retirement and their health deteriorates. And I think staying active, having a sense of purpose, whatever that means to you, I think that that's one of the keys to successful retirement. It's not just about money. And then number five, what tax strategies do I need to know about in retirement? And Peg, we hit on that a little bit, but maybe before we go to listeners, we want to go just a little bit deeper there because we kind of ran out of time. And I guess one of the things I wanted to mention, I think prevailing wisdom is that we should defer our taxes as long as possible, right? So if I have a traditional IRA or a traditional company retirement plan like a 401k, prevailing wisdom says don't take withdrawals from there unless you absolutely have to, unless you need money for lifestyle or you've hit the age of required minimum distribution. But I tell clients all the time, sometimes you're better off paying a little bit more in taxes this year than you would have to, because you'll pay a lot less in the future. We're looking at trying to minimize your taxes over your lifetime, not just in the current year. And sometimes if you can take money out of a tax-deferred retirement plan at a low tax rate, it makes sense to do that. Even if you don't need the income that year, maybe you end up taking a withdrawal, paying the taxes, and putting the balance in a Roth IRA where no future taxes will. We call that a Roth conversion. So go a little deeper, Peg, in talking about some of the tax strategies that might present themselves to folks once they've hit retirement age.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's ideal, as I mentioned before, with the taxable, the tax deferred, and the tax advantage. Ideally, to me, you would take a third, a third, a third. I'm going to be really, really simple here. But if you take distributions of a third, a third, a third, you're already saving taxes per year. But then you throw in the changes on tax rates, the changes of how you're taxed. They're talking about Social Security now. Maybe some people will get taxed more on their Social Security. I know that's a hot topic right now, so I'm not saying that I think that'll happen. But there's talks about it. And in my career, and Bruce, in your career, how many times have we seen the tax rates and the way we're taxed change? So that is a complex undertaking just for a certain person. And I would say even for engineers and CPAs, it's a lot. You retired, maybe you want to go out and do things versus try to figure out, where do I take that money from? The good news is we've created buckets that are in all categories. The problem is some people come to us maybe a week or maybe a year before retirement, and they have 100% of their money in tax deferred. Well, you're kind of, you're hand tied just because you don't have any other resources that are not taxed. So coming in early and trying to figure out how you might be able to diversify the way that your money's taxed now, when you're younger, will optimize your plan and give you so many more choices down the road. And then also a professional, if you're working with a tax person or a CPA, they would be able to guide you or your financial advisor as to what they foresee taxes going to be. I know sometimes it's just a guess, but they have more insight. And then also based on your resources, you know, where to take that money from. I have found, Bruce, that tax preparers don't like to get into tax distribution, like where to take money from. They like to kind of more so stay in their lane as far as preparing taxes. It used to be long ago, decades ago, that CPAs and people who prepare tax returns would say, hey, why don't you go purchase a Roth IRA? Why don't you go buy a deductible IRA? It'll lessen your taxes, that kind of thing. I find now that, you know, more so financial advisors are coaching clients versus tax advisors. So that's just a little bit more insight as to, you know, how much you need to understand taxes. And once again, this is all about making your money last as long as you do. Bruce?
Yeah, last thought, and then we'll let listeners drive the rest of the show. But Peg, you said something really profound, as you frequently do. What we're really talking about here is tax diversification. And I think most of our listeners understand that diversification, when it comes to investing, is a smart thing, right? You mitigate risk. You don't put all of your eggs in one basket. You don't put all of your money in one stock or one bond. You have a lot of stocks, a lot of bonds, a lot of funds. You might have some real estate. You might have some cash. You might have gold and silver and other precious metals. You might have commodities. Diversification. Everybody understands diversification from an investment standpoint, but they don't often think of diversification from a tax standpoint. We want some money in investments that are fully and immediately taxable. We want some money in tax-delayed or tax-deferred investments. And yes, we want some money in investments where maybe we eliminate taxes altogether, like Roth IRA. And most people, in my experience, don't know how to do that. And the good news, though, is it's never too late. Even if it's late in life, like you said, Peg, you're a week or a year away from retiring, there might still be things we can do, like I mentioned this earlier, Roth conversions that can help help you create more diversification. But we want you to have options when we talk about your money lasting, and we talk about retirement income planning or spending the smart money first. I like to call it the wealth enhancement smart money strategy. We want you to have options of where you can take that income from. If all of your money is in one place and you're not diversified, there's not much planning opportunity for us. You're painted into a corner. But if I've got some money taxable, some tax deferred, and some tax advantaged, between that and the various rates of return on different investments, because I also diversified from an asset allocation standpoint, it gives us many more options on how we maximize the efficiency of that retirement income. And I tell clients all the time, the smartest place to take your income from this year might not be the smartest place next year. So we need to have review meetings at retirement and look at it constantly and make sure that we're always taking the income that you want for the lifestyle you want from the best possible place. And it changes. It's not a set it and forget it. You know, that's my lifetime retirement income strategy. You really have to look at it every year or even every 6 months. Any last thoughts, Peg, before we go to listeners?
No, I think we get listeners involved.
Danny?
Yes, indeed, and we have a bunch. Let's get to the first one. This text says this. I have a capital gains tax on some mutual funds that sit outside a tax-deferred product due to trades made by the fund. What is an alternative to mutual funds that might reduce my cap gains tax until I actually draw on those funds? Might it be an ETF?
That's a great question. So, Peg, I'm going to tee this up a little bit for you and kind of give some clarity for some things listeners might not know. So a fund is a tricky investment from a tax standpoint, right? Because you've got one investment, but within that investment, there might be a lot of different things, and there might be trades and transactions and dividends and all kinds of things going on, so that it creates a lot of different tax consequences if that fund is not in an IRA or a Roth IRA or some type of strategy that offers the investor some tax shelter. So we can really expand just even on that text question and dig a little deeper into tax ramifications of funds. And I think the texter, Peg, also mentioned an ETF. Peg?
Yeah, mutual funds seem a little bit more historic than ETFs, which are exchange-traded funds. Although they've been out there for decades, they're very, very popular today because of tax preference treatment. Well, mutual funds is just that. You're buying shares with a bunch of other people in a portfolio, and I always say there's somebody sitting behind the desk, you know, deciding to trade stocks today or buy stocks today on your behalf as a mutual member, you know, of that fund. The negative is that at the end of the year, they're going to take all those losses and gains, cross them, and then distribute them to the shareholders. People don't necessarily like that because that can alter their taxes that they don't even know is going to happen. You might feel like you've got the most strategic tax planning that you can throughout the year, and then all of a sudden you get this distribution, which will throw everything off. Like maybe you get taxed more on your Social Security, maybe you get taxed on something else that trickles down. One of the negatives about mutual funds, and it's people are aware of this, but maybe not as much as they should be, is that if you do want to sell some of your mutual fund, all I was talking about so far was just the manager trading inside that mutual fund on your behalf. But if you decide, oh, I want to sell this fund and you want to get out at a certain time during the day, you can't. All of us, if I was to sell at 9 a.m. and you were to sell at 10 a.m., we're all going to get the price at the end of the day. We don't actually get to say, hey, this morning the market's really high, I want to sell when it's high. We get the end of the day. So that's a negative. Exchange-traded funds became very popular because what they did is they actually kind of put that same kind of mutual fund in, assets inside, but it's inside a bubble. And I tell my clients that this is a bubble that really can't be penetrated when the trading happens. So the trading is happening in this bubble, and there's no distributions that go out to the client unless you decide you want to sell those shares. So in that case, it's the same as the mutual funds that you're going to take your capital gain if you sell those shares. The difference between the ETF and the mutual fund in this trading ability is you can trade or sell your shares or buy more shares in at a certain time. So if I want to go buy shares at 9 a.m. and you want to buy them at 10 a.m., we're going to get that time frame's pricing. And so that is another positive when it comes to ETFs, because you have, you know, somebody that you can control your taxes. The other thing you should know, too, is that the mutual funds are really actively managed by this person behind the desk. A lot of ETFs are passively managed, meaning, you know, something like the S&P 500 is a passive investment. There isn't somebody trading every day, although there's a lot more ETFs out there today than there's ever been. And so they are doing some combination now of passive and active with these ETFs. I know this is long, but I think it's valuable to know that they both are good, but you should be knowledgeable about their different the different ways that they operate. Bruce?
That was such a good, detailed answer on a complicated question. I just want to add one thing. Based on the explanation you gave, I'm sure there's listeners going, that sounds awful. Why would I invest in a fund that I get a tax liability on, even though I'm just holding the fund? I didn't sell any shares. Well, that's not fair. So one of the disadvantages of traditional mutual funds and ETFs, frankly, any kind of a fund, one of the disadvantages is a certain loss of tax control. But what you gain is diversification. So if you have a very limited amount of money, let's say you've got $1,000 or $5,000 to invest somewhere, if you went to try to buy individual securities, individual stocks or individual bonds, you couldn't buy very many. It might be one or two companies, and you don't have diversification, which means you have risk. But if I put that much money in one fund might have 100 positions, and I'm getting much greater diversification. So we might tell a client, look, the loss of tax control is a disadvantage, but that disadvantage is worth it, or it pales in comparison to not having proper diversification. We would place a much higher priority on being properly diversified as opposed to having more individual tax control. So there's any investment, there's always going to be positives and negatives, and you have to weigh the positives and the negatives and take a course of action that makes the most sense for you as an investor. Danny?
Here's another text from a listener. How does one decide how much to convert to Roth per year?
Great question. So, Peg, number one, does a Roth conversion make sense, yes or no? And how do we determine that? And then number two, how do we determine how much? If we say the answer is yes, we're going to do some conversion, how do we determine how much?
Yeah, what I suggest and what I do personally is do a tax return before the year ends. So, we've got some simple formulas that we can, you know, plug in taxable income, Social Security income, pension income, and then throw in a couple numbers: 10,000 convert to a Roth, 25,000 convert to a Roth. And it'll show, this is a Wealth Enhancer Group template, it'll show how much change by me just put this input in there about how much I can convert. Now, when I say how much I can convert, that's just a number that is taxable on your tax return. It doesn't have to be for a Roth conversion. It could be for something else, you know, where maybe you want to sell a stock or something and you're going to have a capital gain. It'll show how much we think, you know, you will have in a tax liability. I think it's important to do that, Bruce, before year end, because there's so much on a tax return that you actually can't see what's happening, meaning is your Medicare costs going to go up because you did that conversion? That you're not going to see on your tax return. That's just something that you get billed from your Social Security, and they take it out of your Social Security. And you have to be mindful of how much income you have, because the higher income you have, the more you're going to have to pay. There's several ripples inside a tax return that you really do not see with utmost clarity in doing this. So my recommendation is, you know, work with a CPA or a tax preparer or your financial advisor if you're thinking about doing a Roth conversion. Bruce?
Yeah, and Peg, I have often had people say, okay, I got $1 million in my 401k plan. I think I should move a fourth of it into a Roth. Let's do a $250,000 Roth conversion. Well, if you do that all in one tax year, you're going to be doing that at probably the highest possible tax rate that you can. Now, it may make sense to do that, but we wouldn't do it all in one year. We might say, let's convert $25,000 a year over the next 10 years so we don't jump multiple brackets and pay, you know, 30 some cents on the dollar as opposed to 22 cents on the dollar. So that type of just income tax planning we do, but as you said, also ripple effects. Danny, can we sneak in one more quick one?
Yeah, I think this might be a quick one. As a grandparent, texter says, is it better to set up a 529 plan for the grandkids in our own name or in the parents' name?
Great question. Peg, 529, how do we set those up for people?
Well, it's a depends. You have to look at the income of the parents. You have to look at the a contribution that you want to make as a grandparent. There's different rules, if you will, about how much you can have that would be tax favorable, you know, for the child that you're thinking about contributing to. So that's not an easy answer, but we would do the analysis for the client to let them know. A lot of states also have matching, and so then it might behoove the parents to own it versus the grandparents.
Danny, I know we're about out of time, my friend. Good to be with you. Thank you for helping us out today. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. And everyone, have a great day.
Absolutely. And we hope you join us again next week with more of your money. In the meantime, if you think of a financial question midweek, let's say, you can call, leave a message, 888-6-ADVICE. You can always email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, wealthenhancement.com. But we do hope you join us again next week with more of your money.